The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Within the margin of error, no clear leader. Donald Trump, 47%. Joe Biden, 46%. They're basically in a statistical tie. But what I will note was there was not a single poll conducted by CNN during the entire 2020 cycle in which Donald Trump got a higher share of the vote than Joe Biden did. So this is a vastly different picture from what we saw 4 years ago.
Democrats and the president's hopes for re-election in 2024. Still early, but Biden's approval rating has sunk to 39%. Nearly 60% of voters think Biden's policies are making the economy worse. Close to 70% of Democrats want somebody else to run for president. And the president's approval among Democratic voters, that's slipping.
Yeah, these are all very troubling for the White House. This new CNN poll shows no clear winner between President Biden and nearly all of the leading Republican presidential candidates.
We're 14 months away from his reelection effort here when Election Day happens, Phil, and this is a rough snapshot. You noted his approval rating is at 39%. 61% of Americans disapproved. This is our brand new poll.
Right now, today. I think a lot of Democrats look at these numbers and say the whispers are finally showing up in this data. People are talking behind their hand. They worry about Joe Biden. Joe Biden's like that grandpa that you love, that you believe in, you owe a lot. But you start to wonder, would you give this grandpa a high-stress job for six more years, or would you want something else for him?
Are you prepared to be commander-in-chief?
Yes, I am.
There you go. If you were concerned about the course that America is on, you've got Kamala Harris. She is waiting in the wings, and she is ready. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's show. You get the live stream at our website, trumpetdaily.com. Also at our Rumble channel, just search for the Trumpet Daily, and you can join the conversation and watch the show. My Twitter handle, at Stephen Fleury. And if you want to email the program, you can reach us at td@thetrumpet.com. So Kamala Harris, the fake vice president, she's ready to step. This is something that she said earlier this week. It kind of made the rounds on the internet. See if you can make some sense of it. Clip 8.
I feel very strongly about the importance as a general matter of engaging in U.S. policy as it relates to foreign affairs. In a way that we pay attention, of course, to the immediate concerns and threats if they exist, but that we also pay attention to 10, 20, 30 years down the line and what we are developing now that will be to the benefit of our country then.
There you go, a nice word salad that went on and on. She feels very strongly about something there. You know, if there's a theme for the first segment on today's show, it's really a similar theme to many, many other segments that we've produced, but that theme is exposure. These frauds are being exposed. The dear leader, he's being exposed. And never mind what critics say about what Tucker did, yet Christine Blasey Ford, she comes forward and says that a possible Supreme Court justice, he was gang raping people 30 some years ago. So that gets a congressional hearing. That gets wall-to-wall coverage. None of it was true. All lies. Maybe this guy Sinclair is lying. But where was the coverage in 2008? You know, I watched most of the Tucker exchange, but I went back and watched the news conference, most of it, not all of it. The news conference that Sinclair gave in 2008. And I mean, he was giving cell phone numbers. He was giving specific locations. He was saying it was this restaurant. It was this limousine service. When he was getting together with Barack Obama. If he's lying, it's pretty elaborate. We'll show you in a moment just how effortless it is for the dear leader to lie. He doesn't hesitate. And it's proven, it's demonstrably proven as false, as a lie. But we'll get to that later. I'm kind of bouncing around all over the place. In any event, God is exposing this crime family. That's what it is. It's a criminal enterprise. And when they cover up their crimes, they try to do it. They try to conceal it using pseudonyms or whatever else they can to cover their tracks. And those tracks are now being exposed. Listen to James Comer as he talks about how that there was no wall of separation between Joe Biden, the big guy, assuming he's the big guy, could have been Obama, who knows? But there was no wall. Suffice it to say, Joe Biden was vice president at the time. Hunter Biden was raking in millions from foreign nationals, many of them adversaries to the United States. He was raking in millions and selling favor to the big guy, clearly. And Comer's uncovering all of this. Clip one.
And we've had testimony, and there's emails, there's more evidence of more meetings where Hunter was told that they needed to call Washington for help. We've had Devin Archer testify and say that. There's evidence that points that the Burisma executives were squeezing Hunter Biden to call Washington for help. So we know that Hunter Biden was communicating with the White House. This email that you just posted was one of many, and we believe there are more that the archives are sitting on, where the Hunter Biden legal team, the Hunter Biden PR people, the Hunter Biden's shady characters who were paying him were communicating through him to his father back and forth. There was no wall between Joe Biden and his son Hunter Biden and his shady business dealings.
No wall at all. That was the business, selling influence, selling out the United States. These people are traitors to their country. Giving favors to China, giving favors to Ukraine, giving favors to Russia, giving favors to Romania, and getting piles and piles of cash money in return. And through it all, of course, trying to cover their tracks. That's why you had the 20 LLCs. And of course, that's why you had the many different aliases that Joe Biden went by. This, again, is Comer on Fox News, number two.
Well, the archives are saying that because it happened during the Obama administration, that Barack Obama will have 30 days to review all 5,400 of these emails in the pseudonyms. And then he will decide whether or not he's going to turn it over to the House Oversight Committee. So your guess is as good as mine. But at the end of the day, we believe that many of these that were using the pseudonyms also had redactions that pertain to things about Hunter Biden, even redacting the fact that he was copied on these. So what Joe Biden's always said and the mainstream media has always gone along with is that, well, there was no, why are you investigating Hunter Biden? He wasn't a part of the government, and Joe Biden had a firewall between the government and his son. That's not true. Mm. We've proven that in the last 2 weeks. There are emails that went back and forth where Hunter's legal team was telling Joe Biden how to spin the narrative about the corruption he got caught in. Mm. There was copies where he was copied about Ukraine foreign policy. And we believe there are many more emails that the National Archives is sitting on.
Notice he said there that the National Archives, they sent these 5,400 emails to Barack Obama to be reviewed. I got that wrong the other day when I was quoting from Town Hall, where I said, you know, this author evidently knows that Barack Obama's running the show behind the scenes. Well, it wasn't a behind the scenes comment. It literally is going to Barack Obama. He's not even in power. And he gets to review. It puts, what a position for Obama. The dear leader is in a difficult position here, because just like with all the Hillary emails coming from her private server, some of these communications undoubtedly went to the dear leader himself. He's implicated in this as well, all of these crimes. So now he's got to decide, all right, do we turn over these 5,400 emails to Comer, throw Biden under the bus, and go ahead and let Kamala Harris take over? Or do we cover up Biden and my crimes? More and more of this. Forget about Larry Sinclair for a moment. Think about the 5,400 emails that Joe Biden was sending out under aliases.
5,400. This is something that Hillary Clinton mastered. And the dear leader as well. This is Andy McCarthy at the New York Post. He says, I'm surprised that anyone is surprised that as vice president of the Obama administration, Joe Biden used email accounts under fake names to loop his son Hunter into official government business. This is how the Obama administration rolled. This is how they all did it. This is how they all tried to cover their tracks. The same spirit that sets up the LLCs so that you can take $5 million from the CCP, but not directly. It's the same spirit that creates all these fake accounts. Says here, when high officials were involved in a dodgy activity they wanted to shield from public disclosure laws, they frequently used pseudonyms, okay? Email accounts. That included President Barack Obama himself. Obama did it. That's right. Obama used pseudonyms. Says, as I argued at the same time, or at the time, sorry, one of the main reasons the Obama Justice Department whitewashed Secretary of State Hillary Clinton's criminally negligent mishandling of classified information through the lawless homebrew server system she set up for doing official government business is that Obama was implicated. That's why they wouldn't go after Hillary. That's why Obama gets on national TV and says, you know, her heart was right. She was a little careless, but there was certainly no malicious intent. And then Jim Comey comes out a few months later. You know, her heart was right, and she, you know, it was pretty careless. And yeah, it might have been spied upon, but she didn't have any malicious intent. They take the cue from the dear leader, and Hillary gets a pass. 30-some thousand emails. Who knows how many pseudonyms? A server, her own server set up in her basement while she's doing government business? That's right. Yeah, Joe Biden, I mean, he learned well from the masters, the real professionals. It says here, he knew, Obama knew that she was using a non-government communications channel because numerous times she used it to correspond with him. Did you get that? Hillary Clinton was corresponding with the dear leader using her private server. Government business. This is what the CCP and the Russians and who knows who else, this is what they were spying upon. These people are sellouts in more ways than one. They're traitors in more ways than one. Not just selling favors for millions. Just exposing all of these secrets, these American secrets to the whole world so that they could cover their tracks here at home so that they wouldn't get caught. It says here, Clinton used not only a non-government, well, let me back up. Obama was implicated. It says she used it to correspond with him. You were never supposed to know that because they concealed it on both ends. It says here, Clinton used not only a non-government address, but a non-secure private domain that the FBI concluded could easily have been and probably was penetrated by hostile foreign intelligence services. It says, for his part, Obama used pseudonyms. He used a different email address. Obviously, Obama and Clinton were not talking about the weather. They were talking, rather, about sensitive matters that are presumptively classified. It says, indeed, Clinton was on an official trip to Russia, which boasts of one of the world's most capable spying apparatuses, during some of this email correspondence with Obama. I mean, this has all been exposed. She was on a trip in Russia, and she's having these correspondence exchanges with the dear leader. It says, if Clinton had been charged in the case, the fact that she was communicating with Obama and that he was using a fake address would have become central to the case. That would have been profoundly embarrassing to Obama, and there was no way the Obama Justice Department was going to let that happen. They're not going to prosecute. They're not going to indict. No way. But they're going to do everything they can to even keep you from being embarrassed. And so Comey comes out, remember, with the statement, summer of 2016. and says that while, and the language was just so carefully selected to say that she did something that was really careless, but certainly not criminally negligent, nothing like that. It says here that would have been profoundly embarrassing. So the administration did three things. First, the Obama White House argued that it was no big deal for high officials to use pseudonyms in emails. No big deal. In fact, it was standard practice. Happens all the time. Yeah, we all do it. Well, they were all doing it. And then it says, second, Obama made it publicly known in an April 2016 interview that he did not want Clinton to be indicted. Remember the guy who always said, hey, whatever happens at the DOJ, I stay out of it. I'm neutral. He went on TV and publicly said she shouldn't be indicted. McCarthy mentions April of 2016. We've got a clip here from, I think this is October of 2015. I think it's 60 Minutes. Listen to how effortlessly the dear leader lies before the question even is completed, coming from the reporter. This is clip number 9.
Did you know about Hillary Clinton's use of a private email server?
No.
While she was Secretary of State?
No.
Do you think it posed a national security problem?
I don't think it posed a national security problem. I think that it was a mistake that she's acknowledged. And I can tell you that this is not a situation in which America's national security was endangered.
This administration has prosecuted people for having classified material on their private computers.
Well, there is no doubt that there have been breaches, and these are all a matter of degree. We don't get an impression that here there was purposely efforts to hide something or to squirrel away information.
Wow, talk about a word salad there at the end. Your administration has prosecuted people that have done this. People that have had classified information on their servers. Yeah, well, I mean, it was the motive, the intent. Definitely pure as the driven snow. But notice at the start, did you know about the secret server? No, I didn't. He said it twice. This man right here was receiving emails from Hillary through that hidden secret server. That's right. And he just looks at the reporter. He looks right into the camera and he says, no, didn't know anything about it. See, they're not only into pseudonyms to cover their tracks. They just lie. I mean, that reporter got a little too close to the truth with, well, doesn't this show hypocrisy on your part or a double standard? Pretty revealing. That's from 2015. This is the same guy who is enjoying his third term today and now wondering, what do we do with the 5,400 emails? Do we hand them over to Comer to expose Joe Biden, who can barely function, and then give it over to Kamala? But if I do that, then I may well expose myself. Pretty interesting. I mean, they are enjoying quite a few victories, as I said on yesterday's program, particularly when it comes to lawfare. But they're also sustaining quite a few defeats, or they're getting pounded across the forehead with the 2x4 in some cases. McCarthy says this. This is following the interview he was referring to, the dear leader, in April of 2016. McCarthy says 3 months later, then FBI Director James Comey announced that there would be no indictment, offering the same rationale Obama had offered. It says, in making that announcement, Comey omitted the reference to Obama as a recipient of Clinton's emails that had been included in earlier drafts of his remarks. I wasn't even aware of this till I read this article. The fact that Comey initially was going to say, you know, yeah, the dear leader got emails through that server as well. But they made sure to delete that before he came out with his public statement. Finally, it says Obama ensured that his email correspondence with Clinton would remain hidden from public view by invoking executive privilege. See, when it's the dear leader, he can use executive privilege. He can say whatever he wants to his lawyers and vice versa. They're not going to be prosecuted. They're not going to be indicted like all of Trump's attorneys in that Georgia case. Because executive privilege and attorney-client privilege, I mean, that has some weight when it's a radical communist in charge. When it's Donald Trump, nothing. Nothing is kept secret. Think about, Donald Trump has said it before. They were spying on me. They've gotten lawyers to flip this, that, and the other. They're trying to get him. I mean, there's 91 counts, 91 felonies for nothing. If Donald Trump was a corrupt politician lining his pockets, giving away political favors for millions in return, if he was doing any of this, think about how much evidence they would have of crime and wrongdoing. As it is, they get him for clerical errors and moving boxes. Yeah, and for, you know, thought crimes, for saying that the 2020 election was stolen. They're openly trying to steal it right now in front of our eyes. 2024, I mean. I mean, all of this just shows, of course they stole it in 2020. They will stop at nothing to try to hold on to power. It's just like my father has written in America Under Attack. What we're seeing is how far, how willing they are to go to shred law, constitution, precedent, whatever, in order to hang on to power. If they've got this, like Sam said before the show started, if they have all the power, well, they'll lie to your face when you know it's a lie. You have to wonder if that reporter knew. Come on. You expect me to believe that you didn't know anything about, she's your Secretary of State, she's working for you, and you and your DOJ have no idea that she's operating, she's doing government work on a personal private email server. Really? See, he can lie to your face and lie when you know he's lying, because he can say, hey, we've got the power. I don't care if you know I'm lying or not. This is communist ideology through and through. When they lose some of that power, then they begin to get a little bit nervous. It says here, at this point, I'll just back up. This is the end of the McCarthy piece. At this point, it is nigh hilarious to hear Democrats claiming there is scant proof that the president was involved in Hunter's business, when it is already abundantly clear that Joe Biden was the business. Without him, without his knowing, I would say eager willingness to enable his son, brother, and other family members to cash in, there would have been no such business. Now listen to this. It says, Biden used pseudonyms for relevant emails that may number in the hundreds for the same reason Hunter set up 20 obscure LLCs to camouflage the payments and their foreign sources, apparatchiks of corrupt and anti-American regimes. Anti-American regimes, and they're just taking in millions, the Biden crime family, and then trying to cover it up through the LLCs, the pseudonyms, and so on. He says, finally, when you're doing something you shouldn't be doing, just think about how simple and commonsensical this is. When you're doing something you shouldn't be doing, you try to keep it under wraps. You try to cover it up, right? It says, but as his career attests, Joe Biden is the very antithesis of an original thinker. He didn't come up with the idea of using fake email addresses. He just followed the Obama playbook. All roads lead to Obama. All roads lead to the dear leader. This is how he operates. And so Hillary did it. Now the Biden crime family, they were doing it. Obama himself did it as well. Remember the statement in here? You see all of these rhinos, like they're the ones that are attacking Paxton, the AG in Texas, in that impeachment hearing. He won that position years ago from one of the Bush family members. So the Bush family's trying to get back at Paxton. They want to destroy Paxton because he's too MAGA for their big, you know, big Republican tent. So get them out. And, you know, look, we want to get establishment Republicans in there. That's why you see such a bitter divide in the Texas legislature right now. Same with Georgia among Republicans. But again, the point my father makes in this book is that here you have these rhino Republicans that would rather submit to this, the dear leader, And all of this corruption, this crime, this deceit, flatteries, lies, they would rather submit to this or at least go along with this than to show any kind of support to Donald John Trump. It's unbelievable. Here again, I can't shout it loudly enough. 2 Kings 14 says there's no helper. God, he looks at the state as it is. He sees the bitter affliction. He says, oh, how bitter. There's just no helper. We're certainly seeing that day in and day out. The Obama playbook. There was a story yesterday. This is from The Federalist. Arizona, according to a court ruling on Friday, Arizona's sloppy ballot signature verification guidance contradicts the plain language of state law. In other words, they cheated. And now this judge and the Secretary of State, they're not going to do anything about it. But here they are, 3 years on almost, saying, well, yeah, they didn't really abide by the rules, the laws in 2020. Carrie Lake's been trying to give some attention to this, but there aren't too many others who have the courage to do so. It says here, Fontes, I'll just pick it up a little bit deep into the article. In other words, Fontes was likely instructing recorders to violate state law by mandating ballots be counted despite using a different signature match standard than what was legally required. So the election official comes along and says, hey, just go by these rules, set aside the state law that's actually passed by state legislatures who are actually voted in by we the people. Forget all that. I mean, this is COVID era. I mean, we've got to make sure everybody has the right to vote, even the dead people. It says here, therefore, this portion of the EPM and the instruction from the secretary do not have the force of law. That's what the judge ruled on Friday, or maybe earlier this week. I forget the day. But it says here, Wright will build on this victory, R-I-T-E, to continue to fight in court for elections that are administered according to democratically elected laws, not illegal partisan commands. You've got these partisans that come along, like Stacey Abrams, and then, of course, Brian Kemp. He goes right along with it. Kemp is compromised. Never mind the disclaimers that Newsmax has to put out there. Now, we don't want to insinuate that Brian Kemp or Stacey Abrams ever broke the law. They don't break laws. Just Donald Trump and his people. I mean, on Trump, we got 91 counts. 91! He's going to jail for 700 years. Banana Republic. This is Banana Republic stuff. I mean, you do have to laugh at times. Because it is so crazy. It's so obviously communist. They're in control. It says here this group is going to go on to fight in court for elections that are administered according to democratically enacted laws. It says the court has ordered all parties and their counsel to appear for a status conference on September 19th. So what? Just think again. Thinking about common sense for a moment. If you come along, even if it's 3 years down the road, or this is, I think, maybe actually regarding the Carrie Lake run for governor. So this was last year. So you get a few months into it. A court concludes, okay, yeah, you cheated. You didn't abide by the rules. So what do you do? Well, you should go back and have a redo. You should go back and do it over again according to the rules. I mean, that's the way a lot of attorneys and judges and even commentators would have thought probably 15, 20, 30 years ago, maybe not even that long. I mean, they do have a history of trying to cheat even as recently as the year 2000. And I guess you could go back to the 1960s as well with Nixon and JFK. Let that go. Just the fact that you don't have commentators that say, well, of course, we've got to go and recount or redo, do something to get rid of these bogus ballots. Instead, they just go forward and the people that abide by the rules, the people that obey the law, it's like their votes are canceled. They're canceled out by the cheaters. This is from the Washington Examiner.
speaking about double standards, and this ties in with what I covered yesterday, how that you sentence the guy that leads up Proud Boys for 22 years for essentially not being at the January 6th protest. You're not even there. And he goes away for 22 years. This is the case of Montez Lee in Rochester, Minnesota. He set a building on fire that ended up killing a man. That was during the Summer of Love, 2020. The man was trapped in the building, 30-year-old man, a father of five. This guy, Lee, he had a rap sheet included burglary, assault, all kinds of things. And Joe Obama's DOJ, Barack Obama's DOJ, asked for the judge to lower his sentence because, here again, his motives were good, don't you know? Yeah, it was the Summer of Love. You have to understand, we're committing acts of violence to try to bring on change. So you have to, judge, you have to consider the motivations here. George Floyd, right? This article from Byron York, it says, in a January 14, 2022 hearing, DOJ prosecutors, and I'm bringing this up, I know it's up in Minnesota, but notice how the DOJ fights in this, or what they fight for in this case, quite unlike the Proud Boys case, where the guy sent a text message, remember, and he wasn't even at the protest. He wasn't even in D.C. It says here, the DOJ noted that, yes, sentencing guidelines call for Lee to be sentenced to between 235 and 240 months in prison. Remember now, this guy set a building on fire and killed a man. But the DOJ asked the judge to show leniency to Lee, asking that he be sentenced to 144 months, or 12 years, instead. In the end, the judge sentenced Lee to 10 years. That's right. Just 10 years for murdering someone. In the sentencing memorandum, the DOJ conceded that Lee had committed a serious crime, one that cost a man his life. His assertion that he did not intend to hurt anyone is of little comfort to the family and friends Mr. Stewart left behind, prosecutors wrote. Mr. Stewart's life has been cut short. A significant sentence is necessary in this case. It says, at that point, the sentencing memorandum took an astonishing turn. Yes, the guidelines call for 20 years, prosecutors admitted, but this is an extraordinary case. Why extraordinary? Because, quote, Mr. Lee's motive for setting the fire is a foremost issue. And then it gets to this key passage. Mr. Lee credibly states that he was in the streets to protest unlawful police violence against black men, and there's no basis to disbelieve this statement. Mr. Lee appropriately, this is all from the DOJ, appropriately acknowledges that he could have demonstrated in a different way, but that he was caught up in the fury of the mob after living as a black man watching his peers suffer at the hands of police. So here you see the DOJ, I mean, they're going after local law enforcement. January 6th, they're heroes. They're heroes. And they make up murders like Sicknick. Banana Republic stuff. But look at what's being exposed, as I said at the top. Top to bottom, they're being exposed. And like I was saying yesterday in the segment on Lawfare, I mean, unless you push back on this demonic movement, they're just going to keep going farther and farther. They're not going to stop. They're going for blood. There was this case yesterday, speaking of pushback, it's some prosecutor in Georgia. Basically, he's using the RICO racketeering laws that Fannie Willis used to go after Trump and his associates. So it's basic, and they're going after these 61 thugs that planned and plotted to destroy this police building that was going up. They went in there with firearms. Well, I don't know if they had guns, but they had explosives. They wanted to blow up the place, and they got caught. So now you have this prosecutor in Georgia saying, okay, well, let's use those RICO laws to go after these 61 protesters that were destroying a police headquarters being constructed.
Listen, this is MSNBC, of course. Their minds explode. Their brains explode when someone comes along and actually uses these same laws that they're trying to twist and massage to get Trump and say, okay, well, let's go after some actual thugs, some actual protesters that caused a lot of violence. This was Chris Hayes' take last night, clip four.
Ever since Fulton County District Attorney Fani Willis brought a racketeering indictment against Donald Trump and his co-defendants, we've talked a lot about Georgia's particularly expansive version of that RICO law. And it seems to be an appropriate tool to use against the transgression of their illegitimate and fundamentally unlawful project to overturn the election. The very breadth of that law can be a real double-edged sword, as people in Georgia, particularly defense attorneys, will be among the first to tell you. We got an example of that yesterday when the very same grand jury that indicted Donald Trump also indicted 61 community activists and others, many of whom were attempting to stop the construction of a new police training facility. But what this application of Georgia's RICO statute does is that it also rolls up a whole bunch of people who did things like get a $62 reimbursement for food and a $12 reimbursement for glue as part of the conspiracy. These people are now looking at 5 years in prison.
Well, this indictment is a ridiculously broad use of the RICO statute to punish protesters for illegal action. And this is basically just a way to explicitly silence protesters, deter them from using their First Amendment constitutional protections.
But it really seems like they are trying to get people to go to 5 years in prison for, like, contributing to a bail fund.
And it's basically just a tool to get people to plead guilty, right, and testify against other people, so that you get one or two hits, you know, as a prosecutor. It's a reminder that, you know, when someone that we think is actually worth prosecuting is prosecuted under one of these statutes, they seem like a great tool of law enforcement. But in actuality, they're used as weapons against people who have a lot less power than Donald Trump.
When it's somebody worth prosecuting. Now, these laws are great. They're perfect. But when it's someone that doesn't have the means, let's say that Donald Trump has, these people, they trespassed. These 61, they trespassed. They brought explosives. They set equipment on fire. They had Molotov cocktails. They attacked police officers. It was highly organized. It was an assault. And it was funded and organized by Democrats, Democrat organizations. So this Republican prosecutor says, all right, let's put these people behind bars for 5 years. And then the heads explode. 5 years. This RICO statute now, it's ridiculously broad in how they're using it. This is the only language these people understand. You have to push back. We take, of course, God's view on this. What does prophecy say? Where is this leading? How do we get prepared individually, spiritually, for what's coming? But just stepping back as an observer, someone who's on the sidelines, if the opponent just keeps crushing you and doing it and abusing its power and twisting laws, you know, what's the way to push back against that? Probably like this. I'm just guessing, but probably like this prosecutor in Georgia is doing. And you see, they can't stand an opponent who will punch back, which is why they detest, they absolutely hate Donald Trump, because he'll do it. Listen to one more clip from Hayes' show last night, clip four.
The thing that was being pursued in the alleged conspiracy of Donald Trump was itself unlawful. Like, overturning
right.
election...
You can't overturn democracy.
Right, like, overturning election, it was unlawful. There was no lawful means to do it, right?
Yeah, I mean, they're playing fast and very loose with the truth in this indictment. It is sloppy. It is political propaganda. It's not a very strong legal document. This is partisan propaganda. This is a way of sticking it to to people who are using the RICO statute against Donald Trump. Right. It is a way of punishing people who are going against law enforcement. And it is a way of silencing protesters.
University. We should also note, in terms of who brought this, DeKalb County DA Sherry Boston has been in this program, withdrew from criminal cases on this. This seems to be the Attorney General, Christopher Carr, is the Republican Attorney General. He's behind this prosecution.
He's behind it. And Sherry Boston actually said she wasn't going to go forward with this because it is so light. It is so unsubstantiated. And it is so clearly a way of telling Georgia, look, you bring charges against a man for trying to overturn democracy, the former president.
Right.
And we will bring charges against the powerless.
You know, it's really not even a tit for tat kind of thing. I mean, those 61 thugs broke into a police training facility and tried to blow it up. I mean, it was actual, there are actual crimes there. With Donald Trump, there are no crimes. They're making it up. But you see their reaction. It's ridiculously broad in how these laws are now being used. Playing fast and loose with the truth. In their minds, you see, those protesters are righteous because they're Antifa, because they're BLM. They can burn, just like the summer of 2020. They can burn, they can loot. In some cases, they can murder. You know, set a building on fire, and if there's a guy trapped inside who dies, you know, the DOJ will say, well, still, you've got to look at the motives. He was setting that building on fire for justice. He wanted justice. He wants some reparations. All these crimes aimed at his race, you have to take that into account. There should be more AGs in the country, as I have said in recent programs. There should be more who would actually use laws to put criminals behind bars instead of going after law enforcement everywhere except for the Capitol on January 6th. To use the laws that are, in many cases, already there, already in the books, to put actual criminals behind bars. This Paxton impeachment trial says here, this is the New York Times coverage, but the effort to save Mr. Paxton, who is seen by many hardcore conservatives as their legal standard bearer, is also the latest proxy in the broader fight over the future direction of the party, both in Texas and nationally. In Texas, you see, it's Paxton against the Bush family. In Georgia, they've got their divisions. You've got it in Arizona as well. They want so badly to extract Trump and MAGA from the Republican Party, but they can't do it. They can't do it. I mean, some rhinos still get in there. You look at Brian Kemp. There's still some rhinos in pretty powerful positions. But many of them are being replaced by Trump-supporting MAGA Republicans. And this has the Bush family and others absolutely furious. Karl Rove, the whole lot of them. Karl Rove's talking, as I played the other day, about how Trump's vulnerable. Yeah, if they peel away 16%, he's dead in the water. Fox Republicans, Rhino Republicans. Whatever you want to call them. Listen to Steve Bannon as he spoke about this impeachment proceeding in Texas, clip 6.
Remember, this impeachment, as we said on the Saturday special, is not really about Ken Paxton. This is once again, in our 30-front war, this is a massive front. And that is because the ascendancy of the Trump movement, the populist movement in Texas, versus the old Bush junta. Ken Paxton, remember, beat the golden child, George P. Bush, the grandson of 41, who was going to be the next president, going to be a president here in the future. That will not happen because of the populist grassroots movement, the deplorables, MAGA, all of it tied together down in Texas. And this is why the Bush junta has teamed with Democrats. This is the exact same thing that's going around the country. In Texas, it's the impeachment trial of Ken Paxton.
It's going on all over the place. Donald Trump, besides the populist movement of behind him, the ordinary Americans,
There's not too many in the establishment that will rise in his defense. Paxton, as you know, we played those clips from earlier this year where he went to that Heritage Foundation event. I think that was February or March. And he got up and for 15 minutes, he talked about how they tried to steal the election in Texas and how that he warned Donald Trump in 2020 in the lead up to the election that, look, if they're doing this in Texas, which is a red state, what are they doing in the swing states? They were trying to, these Democrat machines from the big cities, Houston, San Antonio, Austin, and so on, they were trying to just send out millions of ballots, mail out ballots that the machines could then harvest. Turn, just like they did with the Kerry Lake election last year. Harvest ballots, you know, change the rules, do whatever, and claim that it's about voters' rights. Everybody gets a vote, right? Even the dead people. That's how these people operate. And we've seen it play out before around the world. Once the communists get control, once they're in power, how do they stay there? Because the people love their policies? Because they cheat, they lie, they steal, they do whatever it takes, as my father has written, to maintain their grip on power. Listen again to Bannon from earlier this week, clip 7.
What you're seeing here in a small scale is exactly what's going on in Georgia. In Georgia, you have, once again, a radical Democrats working with Kemp, who's a part of the Bush junta, right? He's the Georgia branch of that. That's the donor class, the establishment, the uniparty, working with radical Democrats, working with Fannie Willis.
They'd rather submit to the dear leader. They'd rather sit down with radical Democrats, communists, than show any kind of support to Donald Trump. Where, when the Fannie Willis indictment rolled out, you know, where was there any pushback coming from either Kemp's office, the legislature? I don't know, maybe this AG that's going after those 61 thugs, maybe he did. But there's not, there very often isn't much pushback. Andy McCarthy, to quote from him again, talking about this case, this might actually be about the Jack Smith case, but it says here, the Department of Justice has been investigating Donald Trump and the January 6, 2021 Capitol riot for nearly 3 years, yet no insurrection charges have ever been brought against Trump or anyone else. Think about this. Among the 91 counts, among the 4 indictments, there has not been any insurrection charges ever brought for Trump or anyone. And yet, what do you hear among the ruling class at the moment, that we've got to disqualify Trump? They're talking about it in Colorado. They're talking about it in New Hampshire. We've got to disqualify Trump. For what? For insurrection. There's nothing in any of the indictments about insurrection. But because of these propagandists and the narrative that they established falsely after January 6, 2021, now, I mean, all it takes is a handful. Let me just get to that segment. I don't know. Did I strike that from my notes? This movement in Colorado. Let me just back up here. I've only got a few minutes. But the movement in Colorado, it said it's been brought on by Colorado rhinos trying to disqualify. Page 5. Where are you? Here we go. Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics, a Washington-based watchdog group, on Wednesday filed a lawsuit on behalf of a handful of voters seeking to bar former President Donald Trump from the 2024 ballot in Colorado under Section 3 of the 14th Amendment based on his alleged involvement in the January 6th attack on the Capitol. Insurrection, in other words. So all it takes is a handful of radicals, and then you get an AG who's a radical communist and a radical judge, you're good to go. You strike Trump from the ballot. Forget about democracy or putting it to the vote or having the people give their voice. No, you just say,
14th Amendment. Yeah, he led the insurrection. Well, is there an insurrection charge in any of the indictments? No, no. So it's just because Joe Scarborough said he led the insurrection that you're going to actually get him canceled from the ballot? This is what they're trying to do. What happens? I mean, we've talked about how the indictments haven't worked, trying to get him disqualified. What happens when that doesn't work? Then what? Well, then you have to wonder if maybe Tucker's onto something. If Donald Trump, you know, better get some enhanced security detail. These people are, in some cases, they've got to be demon-possessed. A lot of them are certainly under the influence, strong demonic influence. Their obsession to get Trump out. Never, 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 never Trump. Get Trump. That's their position. That's their movement. That's their aim. That's all that they want. That's all they care about. This is from the Wall Street Journal. It says, you'd think Donald Trump's opponents would learn when they fight the former president in the voting booth, they have won every time since they lost with Hillary Clinton in 2016. This is the Wall Street Journal, keep in mind. In fact, Trump won again. It says here, but when they use lawfare, impeachment, or phony collusion claims, they make Mr. Trump stronger. Here we go again. Now that their indictments have boosted Mr. Trump in the GOP primary polls, his opponents are resorting to their worst idea since the panicky agitation of 2017 to remove him via the 25th Amendment. Now they want to invoke Section 3 of the Constitution's 14th Amendment to disqualify him from the 2024 ballot. Even for the Wall Street Journal, and they're never Trump. The worst idea yet. It says the 14th Amendment is one of the great post-Civil War amendments that enshrined equality under the law. Section 3 was aimed at Confederates who had taken up arms against the Union. Some legal scholars argue that this clause can now be used to disqualify Mr. Trump. So now expect more litigation, expect more courts to be pulled into this. They've got to consider it now because Lawrence Tribe says that he should be disqualified. Some left-wing hack lawyer says he should be disqualified. So now it's got to go. We've got to get some kind of litigation out of this. You wonder if it's this particular move that will end up sooner rather than later at the Supreme Court. You have to wonder what the Supremes are thinking at the moment, or at least five of them. When are they going to intervene? When are they going to at least slow down this freight train of demonic force? When will they step up? When will they speak up and say, enough, enough of the madness? If you don't have a copy of this book, it tells you everything you need to know about where we are in this nation, where we are in Bible prophecy. The 800 number, it's 1-866-930-3024. The email address, td@thetrumpet.com. The Twitter handle, @StephenFlurry, Stephen with a PH. You are listening to Stephen Flurry, and this is The Trumpet Daily. We thank you for joining us on today's show, and we'll see you again tomorrow.